What's up, everyone? It's Cheryl here, and I am the host of this episode on the Philippine X and Wellness podcast. We're talking here with Dr. Rona Saidi on the topic of mental health and chronic pain. How does chronic pain show up in our bodies as a manifestation of what we're dealing with mentally? And inversely, how can our mental health impact what's showing up somatically in our bodies in the form of possibly headaches, lower back pain, fibromyalgia? We're here to talk with Dr. Rona to find out more and hope that you enjoy this episode. Maayong adlaw, welcome to episode 6 of season 4 for the Philippine X and Wellness podcast. I am your host, Cheryl Sampson Ramirez, and my pronouns are she, her, sha. For this episode's audio description, currently I am wearing a light green dress. I have silver headphones on that are wired to my computer. They're as big as DJ headphones can be. I have wide glasses, vintage glasses with a rose gold frame and sparkly accents. And I have long wavy hair with blue tips. In my background, I have a curtain with white and gray zigzags. Following our last episode, Psychedelic Assisted Therapy with LCSW Wilhelmina de Castro, this month, we'll be talking about mental health and chronic pain. Our guest for this episode is Dr. Rona Saidi, mind-body psychologist, chronic pain specialist, and the Greater Los Angeles co-chapter lead of Therapy Nye alongside LMFT Ariel Landrum. As mentioned in previous episodes, all views discussed are for informational and educational purposes only. It's not meant to be medical advice, nor does it constitute therapy or professional advice. Always consult with your healthcare practitioner, especially before starting any exercise or new health program, or a qualified mental health professional for your particular condition. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome to our podcast, Dr. Rona. Welcome, Dr. Rona.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me here today, Cheryl.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
Yes, so I'm Dr. Rona. I use she, her pronouns. And for those who are tuning in, currently I am wearing a green striped top that's kind of off my shoulders a bit. I'm wearing gold jewelry. I'm also wearing headphones. Mine are white over the ears. And in my background, I have my beautiful Monstera plant that I love to look at and enjoy in my office. And that's where I am at today.
Awesome. Now, Dr. Rona, we typically like to open our episodes with knowing where our guests are from. So to your knowledge, where are both sides of your family from and where are you currently streaming from?
Yes, so my mom's side of the family and my mom, she grew up in the area of Batangas. My dad was born in Cavite, also grew up there. I myself actually was also born in the Philippines, in Manila, but then my family moved to California when I was around 5 years old, so I did grow up here in California. Currently, I'm streaming from Tongvalan within the Inland Empire in Southern California.
Great. We're just excited to expand our reach and have more representation geographically, globally throughout the world. So glad to hear that we're representing the IE in this episode.
Yes. Yes.
Now, we're looking forward to unpacking the intersections on this topic between mental health and chronic pain within this episode. Before we dive in, let's get to know you better and start with your origin story, Dr. Rona. What were the events that led to your path of pursuing a career in mental health? And why did you decide to specialize in the field of psychology specifically? So For our community that isn't familiar with PsyD, the PsyD is the doctorate in psychology, correct?
Yes, that is correct. So Ron is speaking here. To be honest, I think mental health and psychology was kind of something that I fell into. You know, when you're that age where you are needing to know, like, everyone's telling you that you need to know what college you want to go to, what to major in, and what to do for the rest of your life. Well, for me at that age, when I was in high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that was me as a senior in high school. The only thing I knew was that I didn't want to be a nurse. I wasn't interested in nursing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to college initially undeclared, did, you know, all my general education classes my first year as a freshman in college. And through that, it included a class in psychology. And really quickly, Psych 101 became one of my favorite classes. And then I decided, well, this is the only thing I'm generally interested in, so I'm going to major in it. But I think even since when I was young, even since then, I've always been interested in trying to understand people, knowing what makes people tick, and kind of knowing why people do the things they do. But it wasn't until I took that class that I realized there's an actual field for that, or that, you know, there's something called mental health. Growing up, it's not mental health wasn't something that was talked a lot about in my family, in Filipino culture, and so
right.
I didn't really know what psychology was until I went to college and was exposed to all of that. So it was definitely an eye-opening experience. And during that time, I also volunteered, did a lot of volunteer work working with kids, and I found that really fulfilling for me. I think because also on a personal level, my adolescence was, I feel like, a hard time for me in my life. And,
yeah,
you know, I think everyone kind of says that their teenage years are tough and they're tough in general, which is, you know, definitely true. But when I think about my teenage years, I feel like in retrospect, when I think back on it, I really do feel like I was struggling with an undiagnosed mood disorder at that time. I felt like what I was experiencing was beyond the typical teenage mood swings. And I even sometimes struggled with things like depression and suicidal ideation, though at the time I didn't know that's what those things were called, right? And
then yeah,
I never really voiced it to anybody. I'm sure a lot of people who maybe end up pursuing mental health as a career can probably relate to this, but it's pretty likely that my interest in mental health as a career stemmed from also wanting and needing to understand my own life experiences, how it shaped me to be who I am. Since it was never really talked about in my family growing up or just in Filipino culture in general, I think pursuing the field kind of became a meaningful journey of me understanding and healing myself along the way, too.
So. Yeah, I can totally relate. When you were going through these mood shifts in adolescence, how did you get through that period of your life?
Oof. Yeah, thinking back on it, I think I relied a lot on the friendships that I had. Even though I do remember specifically like isolating myself a lot, felt like even my best and closest friends like didn't really understand what I was going through. But I know that I spent a lot of my time like throwing myself into like my extracurriculars. So I was a choir kid in high school, and I think that really got me through my tough times because. Like the high school that I went to was also very rigorous in academia, and I struggled honestly through that, and like going to choir and doing dance classes like really supported me. I think that's really what got me through it, through those tough times. But yeah.
And now we hope that with this episode we can provide additional tools for parents maybe that might be listening in, or even adolescents that might be listening in, to help them navigate some of these tough times that they might be experiencing either firsthand or secondhand as a parent. I understand, Dr. Rona, you're also a certified yoga practitioner. So tell us a little bit more about how you decided to pursue that route in addition to your mental health practice.
Oh, yes. It's interesting because it's kind of tied in like to my pursuit of my mental health career. So really how that came to be was during my pre-internship year, I was working in a community mental health clinic organization that was also providing services for substance use disorders and other mental health conditions. Mm-hmm. And what I got out of that experience was that what all my education and training in mental health and behavioral health was barely just enough to help the clients and the population that I was seeing at that time. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because a lot of the clients that I met with were, even though they were being referred to me for things like depression, anxiety, and trauma, a lot of these clients also had significant chronic health issues and specifically chronic pain. So I was running into this like co-occurring thing a lot. And at the time, I really had no idea how to help my clients. And so during that time in my life, I sought out like training outside of my training program already. And at that time, I was also doing yoga for my personal self, like for my own personal health, like to be able to deal with the stressors of being in internship, as well as my graduate school program, the demands and that all of that required. It was something that I was doing just for self-care. And with that firsthand experience with yoga, I saw how beneficial it was for my own health. And I was like, wait a minute, I can help my clients. This is something that my clients would probably benefit from too. And so it was kind of actually serendipitous because during that year in the area that I was working with, there was a training that I came across for trauma-informed yoga. And at that time, I had no idea that was a thing. I was like, I'm just a person who goes to yoga classes, like, you know, on the weekends or whatever. But I didn't know it was a thing. And I came across this. And as a mental health clinician who was working with a lot of clients, a lot of trauma clients at that time, it obviously struck my interest. So I signed up for it. I did like this weekend intensive training and, you know, learned all these things that could be helpful for my mental health clients that I was seeing at that time. So it all became kind of integrated into each other. And I wanted to continue implementing that into my work with folks. And so after my internship year, I then pursued a postdoctoral fellowship in primary care and chronic pain. And it was in that experience that I even like further pursued a yoga teacher training certification, specifically through Stanford, who offers this Yoga X program, which is meant to integrate yoga into healthcare settings. And so I was like, this is perfect. This is exactly what I'm interested in. Like, I, you know, at the time I was just like, hey, I'm integrating like some things that I learned from this yoga thing at the time into my work. But now there was this program that I came across that had that very intention of like, how do we bring yoga into healthcare settings? And so I was like, let's do it. I signed up for the whole teacher training and became, you know, I completed it, became certified. And it was just a fantastic way to grow my passions and interests in mind-body health. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it really helped me understand the importance of health psychology, which was not a thing that I even knew about when I was back in grad school. So I knew that was a specialty.
I didn't know there actually until now. I didn't even know that there is a health psychology. That's really fascinating. I know yoga has different types of branches, right? Like there's like Iyengar, Hatha, Kundalini. So your particular practice, is it rooted in any one of those branches or systems or...
So the program that I did the teacher training in, they specifically attend to like the eight layers of the self. They really draw back to the traditional and authentic teachings of yoga, which I really appreciated as part of the program. They taught us a little bit about different types and different branches of yoga, but the main like things that we focused on were sort of the like eight layers of the self and things like that. But it was pretty fun. Yeah,
cool. And now, did you get to practice also in a healthcare setting? You mentioned, yeah,
This was during my postdoctoral fellowship year, so I was working actually in San Mateo Medical Center for my postdoc. And what was really fun was I was able to like have a yoga group for patients who were dealing with diabetes. Their primary care physicians wanted their patients to be more active and kind of do more exercise, and yoga was kind of like a way to encourage people to move a little bit more, to incorporate exercise into their everyday routines. And so I was able to incorporate that in the medical center there, and that was really an amazing experience. So I really enjoyed that, and then also incorporated it into my one-on-one sessions with patients too.
And talk about alignment. I mean, diabetes is one of the medical concerns and challenges that our community is also dealing with. So that's pretty awesome to hear that you got firsthand experience in working with that specific population and helping them navigate their own health challenges as they've been diagnosed with diabetes. And you're talking about both. I know there's two types of diabetes, type 1, type 2.
Yeah, it was for anyone in the clinic who was referred by their primary care physician to like join the class. So,
What was the outcome of that experience? When like thinking back on it, how did your patients respond to that experience of having gone through that program with you?
Yeah, it was so rewarding to see patients come in and really engage in the class. I think for a lot of them too, they were like monolingual Spanish speakers and or folks who are like bilingual, and so maybe it was their first time doing yoga ever, and it was free for them. It was covered by their Medi-Cal insurance, and I think for them it was a really proactive way that they could take charge of their health, and it was easy access for them. They just come to the same medical place, setting where they do all their medical appointments, and they're able to attend this class. So I think it was really, really helpful for them. Like they found the experience a great complement to all of their other medical appointments. And it was something that I feel like they felt good about, like being able to move their bodies in a way where, a lot of times exercise can feel intimidating for folks who have never tried it before or who haven't implemented that into their everyday routine. And so gentle yoga was a way that we could access like all kinds of patients and patients of different levels, right, of activity. So because we incorporated a lot of like chair yoga, and it was very specific to implementing like accessibility, right, for all kinds of patients.
No, for sure. I know my favorite part of a yoga class is Shavasana.
Yes. Yes. Oh, it was wonderful to like see everyone just fully relax in those moments. So,
and for those that are unaware of what Shavasana is, it's like usually at the end of class when you can just let go and relax in a resting position.
Yeah, sometimes you fall asleep too, and like you really need that.
And sometimes you end up snoring too. I've heard that in classes.
Yeah, so you get fully relaxed.
Yeah, that's the biggest compliment to a yoga teacher right there.
I know I did my job.
Exactly. Now, let's move in more to your experience in being a mind-body psychologist. Mm. Explain to our community what being a mind-body psychologist entails. I have a feeling that it's partly what we've started to discuss. Mm-hmm. And what your clients would expect to experience in individual therapy with you, given this particular focus.
Yes. So for me, being a mind-body psychologist means seeing a person holistically. I mean, that's the simplest way that I like to describe it. And it's having the understanding that mental health is physical health and that physical health is mental health. So I always like to say that as human beings, we are all literally one being. Like, we have many layers, but in my opinion, seeing those layers as completely separate from one another would be doing a disservice to a person who is seeking like services or treatment. And so, I always operate out of the approach that our mental and emotional processes impact what goes on inside our bodies on a physiological level, so somatically, and vice versa. So, yeah, one thing I always tell my clients is that our brains are not just floating around in our skulls. It's literally connected to the entire rest of our body through the nervous system. So I would say that a lot of my work is based on understanding the nervous system, whether I'm working with someone who deals with anxiety, trauma, or is coping with chronic pain or a chronic medical condition. Yeah. In my work with clients in individual therapy, I teach a lot about the nervous system. We discuss strategies for regulating the nervous system and understanding how mental health can manifest somatically in the body. I also often include discussions with my clients about their health habits or lifestyle, because the people who see me in therapy generally are looking to balance their life as a whole. So mm-hmm. they are wanting to work on implementing healthy habits and improving their relationships with their bodies. So generally what clients can expect to experience when working with me is that I also integrate mindfulness and yoga, as we've kind of been talking about, concepts and techniques and philosophies from those from the branches of mindfulness and yoga. So things like meditation, somatic tracking, a lot of breathing exercises, and even mindful movement. Those things are usually a part of every session that I have with all my clients, no matter what they're bringing in, as I find it's really important to make those things a consistent part of my work with folks.
Right. And that sounds like a total epitome of psychosomatic right there.
Yes.
The connection between the mind and how it manifests in the body. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious to know, getting your doctorate in psychology, what was your dissertation on?
Ah, yes. Great. Great question. So,
yeah.
My dissertation, it's the title's like quite a mouthful, so I'm not going to go into it. But
no worries.
Essentially, at the time, I was very interested in knowing more about Filipino American mental health. But when I was in grad school, there actually was not a lot of research on it. We had Kevin Nadal's work, which I think a lot of people in the community are familiar with.
But shout out to Dr. Nadal.
Yeah, literally that was it. Him and Dr. EJ David as well.
Mm-hmm.
Their research was like the bread and butter of anything Filipino psychology related. It was a little bit hard trying to do some research on Filipino American mental health, but I wanted to add to that and expand on that. And in my research, I came across readings from Psikolohiyang Pilipino, so Filipino psychology mm-hmm. from the Philippines. And essentially, my dissertation kind of integrated both Filipino American psychology concepts like colonial mentality and things like that with indigenous Filipino psychology concepts and research. So, including a lot of inherent Filipino values. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to integrate both of those to have a more holistic understanding of Filipino-American mental health and experience.
Yeah.
And then the other layers that I added into my dissertation were spirituality, as well as interventions like family therapy, because since we are, as Filipino cultures, very family values oriented, I found that maybe like some interventions and strategies from family therapy might be helpful for the population. So it's a long-winded thing, but it was a lot of work.
Yeah, no worries. I'm curious to know, what kinds of challenges did you experience in your dissertation when doing this type of work within our community? What kind of challenges did you face?
Honestly, the biggest challenge was, twofold. One, that there wasn't that much research at the time on it.
Right.
Secondly, I wasn't actually experiencing a lot of real life experiences with like meeting Filipino clients in therapy. When I was in grad school.
Yeah.
Just like the areas I was working with, not a lot of Filipinos, but also, you know, the research shows that Filipino Americans have a low help seeking rate. So I think that has changed since I was in school. And also with the research piece, I think there's been a lot more research now into Filipino American mental health, which is awesome. I'm so happy to see that happening. But yeah, those two things I would say were the hardest things, was not being able to have real life experience while I was doing my dissertation, or like exposure to working with Filipino Americans directly in therapy. And then also the lack of research, to just a lot, like lack of resources, really.
And what were your major research findings?
So that came out of it,
yeah.
Yeah, so my research was like a lit review, and I sort of like conceptualization formation. So I didn't like have a hypothesis that I was testing like I didn't survey people or anything.
Got
like
it.
That. It was okay. Just like a theoretical, I guess, like formulation kind of written paper.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for clarifying that. Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Rona, you offer online therapy sessions for around various areas and foci. Mm-hmm. So share with our community what areas you typically address or encounter in your therapy sessions. Before we dive in, mm-hmm. let's first talk about demographic. So that
yes.
can give us more context around the demographic of your clients. Let's maybe start first with age, gender identification, and ethnicity.
Mm-hmm. So most of the people who I see in my practice are Filipino American or AAPI. I see a lot of women of color, usually 20s to, I would say, 40s, late 40s. Pretty a great range of folks. I see a lot of people who are first, second, or third generation descendants of immigrants. You know, usually that it comes with navigating complicated or difficult family or cultural dynamics. And then also learning to work through things like perfectionism, imposter syndrome, or burnout, especially okay. in the workplace or in school. So that's kind of demographic wise and what they usually bring in.
Got it. Are there also different, when you're talking about your own experience growing up in adolescence, your undiagnosed mood disorders, are there also prevalent themes that are coming out in your therapy sessions with this particular demographic that you identified?
The folks who usually see me deal with a lot of high functioning anxiety. Very relatable for me personally.
Okay.
Folks who are high achieving. sorry, that's my dog. For the folks who are hearing that.
Wants to participate in the conversation and chime in as well.
Yes. A lot of high achieving folks. A lot of folks who bring in a history of complex trauma. So maybe they've like gone through a lot in their life, dealt with a lot of experiences that have shaped who they are. These folks who find me, especially those who are descendants of immigrant families, are usually also interested in healing generational trauma. So that's part of that. And decolonizing, you know, their mental health, decolonizing the way of thinking and living. So those are the folks who tend to find me on, online.
And because you're a mind-body psychologist, I'm curious to know how is this maybe like trauma or this high anxiety, how is it showing up in the body with your clients that you see?
This definitely ties into things like chronic pain and chronic health conditions. So a lot of the clients that I see are not only bringing in these like high functioning anxiety struggles, but also they might be dealing with things like fibromyalgia, which is sort of like a whole body pain type of condition. Other chronic health conditions, like we've talked about diabetes and high blood pressure, those are really common that folks might bring in. Chronic fatigue, as you might probably guess, folks who are, you know, high achieving or in really high stressful jobs, or are in school in really difficult programs, they might be dealing with things like chronic fatigue, even things like health anxiety. Chronic headaches and migraine is a big one. IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. Those are, to name a few, some ways that stress can manifest in health and a chronic health condition.
Interesting. I'm listening to you and I'm wondering if our community is also listening to you, Sharon, and are like, well, I might have chronic fatigue because I like to take naps like after work. I mean, how would like you differentiate just being tired from your workday and like chronic fatigue?
Sure.
How would you like differentiate and distinguish the difference between that?
Yes, that's a really good question. And one that is important to when I work with clients too, it's important to like differentiate that. So so in sort of the medical world, they talk about something that's called post-exertional malaise. So for those who don't know what that is, it's like when you have engaged in a lot of activity or even just daily activity, and it causes a significant crash. So it's beyond just feeling tired and needing to take a nap in the middle of the day. It's when, you know, it becomes difficult to do everyday things. Maybe it feels like it requires so much energy to do even just the regular everyday things. Mm-hmm. And then when you do them, you have a significant crash where maybe you're not even able to function for a day, a week, 2 weeks. So it can be quite debilitating for folks. Just like the level of energy navigation is really difficult. And that's when you know when it's impacting kind of your daily functioning, that's like the more severe kind of chronic fatigue or post-exertional malaise.
Wow. You're probably having some listeners listening to this saying, okay, Dr. Rona, I'm waiting for your contact information. How do I sign up to be one of your clients? Especially as you're explaining this process, I'm sure there are people that are like, all right, get to the contact information already, Cheryl.
We'll get there.
Okay. Now let's dive in and talk about our episode titled Mental Health and Chronic Pain. This is Cheryl speaking. Explain to our community how mental health and chronic pain are interrelated, Dr. Rona.
Yes. So, as I mentioned before, I like to say that mind and body are one, and you can't necessarily separate them without talking about the other. At least I don't think we should. But to kind of like go more deep into this, when a person is dealing with, let's say, anxiety or depression or other mental health condition, it's often inevitable that things like their sleeping habits, their eating habits, or other physical activity is also impacted, and usually in a negative way. And in turn, this can be detrimental to a person's physical health And then when that is being experienced over a long period of time, that can lead to a chronic health condition. On the flip side, if a person is dealing with a chronic pain condition or other chronic medical condition, it is also inevitable that their mental health is affected and their sense of well-being. Things like their cognitive ability, so concentration or focus are things that my clients often bring up that gets affected. Ability to regulate their emotions when they're under high stress, so stress management. Their relationships with family and friends gets affected. And then a big one is identity, their identity, like needing to explore like who they are now with maybe some of the limitations that their conditions might be bringing into their lives. That can affect self-esteem. It can affect self-perception. So all these things related to mental health gets affected as well. So a person dealing with chronic pain or a chronic health condition too, over a long period of time, they might feel a sense of helplessness or hopelessness, you know, like a struggle with feeling like they'll never get better is a common theme that I come across. And that can lead to feeling depressed. It can lead to depression, or maybe they're dealing with constantly worrying about their symptoms or their health, which, you know, the anxiety gets really spiked and amplified then. So it becomes a bidirectional relationship between mental health and physical health. So
Now, typically when people come to see you, are they leading with the somatic symptoms that are showing up, the chronic pain? Are they leading with more of the mental health and the chronic pain being a secondary thing that's showing up? Or is it kind of a combination of both?
I definitely a combination. I think most people who initially find me are looking for a therapist. And so by nature, it's for mental health related reasons. But because I sometimes market myself in my business through like for chronic pain and health stuff, then, you know, occasionally I'll have a client who's seeking me out specifically for those things. But yeah, generally I do have a mixture of both. And with either, it's always important for me to explore both, right? So that's kind of how I approach things.
And for our listeners or our community that are still trying to determine if they would be a future client of yours, how also would you differentiate between the chronic pain that is showing up as it relates to mental health, or for someone that's trying to distinguish between, let's say, chronic pain that surfaces through the aging process? So as I'm listening to you, I'm like maybe thinking about my mom, right, who's maybe elderly and is complaining of arthritis, or for maybe people that are entering in their 40s that are dealing with perimenopause or menopausal symptoms that might be experiencing pain. And maybe they're trying to like figure out, is this, are these our hormonal shifts that are coming through aging, or is this a manifestation of what I might be dealing with mentally? Is there any way that you can also maybe explain that, those distinctions?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I think I'll refer back to kind of what my like main mantra is, which is like it's mind and body are one. And so it's important to have your medical health treatments and appointments as well as integrating something like therapy, for example, with someone who specializes in chronic health conditions, because even so what you were saying earlier about psychosomatic things, so sometimes if like pain is showing up in the body as psychosomatic, meaning it might be specifically derived from stress or trauma or a mental health condition, whether it's that or whether it's, hey, I'm dealing with something like arthritis, or maybe I was diagnosed with cancer and that comes with a lot of like pain symptoms or physical symptoms. Either version of that, either version of those patients would be would benefit from seeing a therapist. So I hope that answers your question in terms of like, it would it like in terms of differentiating where like a chronic pain symptom or a chronic health condition is coming from. It's almost like the chicken or the egg kind of question, where maybe the answer isn't that important. What is important is for a patient who might be dealing with these conditions to have a holistic care team. So that includes medical providers. It includes like physical therapy. It includes having a mental health provider on your team, like, and all these other methods for managing chronic pain. The most effective way to treat chronic pain and chronic health conditions is to have an integrative, like, modalities of approaches. So,
yeah,
that helps answer your question a bit.
No, that does help, because either way, whatever you're maneuvering through, and if I could sum up what you were just saying, you would still benefit from a therapy as a way to help you navigate whatever you're dealing with, whether it be a physical symptom or symptoms that are arising from your medical condition, or it could be a developmental stage that you're learning to navigate through. Either way, it could be a component that would be advantageous for you to take advantage of.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about, for you specifically, what are the circumstances, Dr. Rona, that influence you to personally specialize in both chronic pain and illness management? You were talking earlier at the beginning of this episode about navigating your own adolescence and the circumstances that brought you into your path to pursuing a doctorate in psychology. Now, what were also the circumstances or events that influenced you in specializing in both chronic pain and illness management personally?
Yeah, so as I was talking earlier about my training experiences, so working in specific settings really led me to want to specialize specifically in chronic pain. I just like found it was the best fit for how I think about mental health and how I think about health and wellness in general. And like I've kind of been saying, that it's almost impossible to separate the two. So it was important for me to find that specialization, to get more training and to get more understanding and knowledge and experience with like dealing with chronic pain or dealing with what patients might bring into in a primary care setting. So all of that was important to me. But as I also shared earlier, like going to yoga was something that I was doing just for my own personal self in my own well-being, to be able to deal with the stressors of the doctoral program, doing internship, doing postdoc, doing my dissertation, as we were talking about, and all those things. And so that really helped deepen my passion for mind-body stuff, which led me into chronic pain and illness and specializing in that. But then I'll also share, like, personally, since my adolescent years, I dealt with chronic headaches and migraine myself. And so that's something that I've dealt with for most of my adult life. And it used to be really, it used to be worse through the years. And I think through my own journey and my own, like, knowledge of getting this experience with my training and education too, I have been able to really manage my chronic headaches and migraine to a point where my frequency of them and the intensity of them has decreased a lot. So it's really helped me. It's important for me to, like, practice what I preach, so to speak. So the things that I work on with my clients, I have to practice them myself too.
Nice. Now, in a typical therapeutic session for a client, other than maybe some yoga techniques or mindfulness practices? Are you bringing in other therapeutic modalities that maybe someone that might want to pursue you as a future client might be more familiar with? So are you working with like family systems theories or cognitive behavioral therapy? Are there certain things, and maybe also explaining that those modalities to our community a bit more?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the graduate school program that I went to, the emphasis was on family systems, actually. So having a systemic understanding of life and the world is really the root, I would say, of where my practice is in general. But other modalities that I also integrate into my work are things like cognitive behavioral therapy. There's specific things around the structure of that can be helpful for things like chronic pain, especially for things also like anxiety and panic, which is something that I work with as well. The structure of that, the exposure therapy type things to anxiety or panic symptoms, that can integrate really well with mind-body stuff. And then the other modality I also integrate into my work often is acceptance-based therapies. Specifically, the modality I'm referring to is acceptance commitment therapy, which really kind of comes from almost like a third wave of psychology modalities. And it is based on a lot of mindfulness approaches as well. But I find that specific approach can be really helpful for folks dealing with chronic pain or chronic health conditions as well, because the main, I guess, point of doing acceptance commitment therapy is to practice things like radical acceptance, to learn self-compassion, and then also to emphasize your values, so that you are learning to align your life and your choices to what's important to you to build a meaningful life, even if and even when we are dealing with a mental health condition or a physical chronic health condition as well. So that I find that quite helpful for all these things.
Okay, let's root this work more within our community, because we are Philippine X in wellness.
Yes.
Are you seeing some themes when it comes to the manifestation of chronic pain? I know you talked about themes earlier within mental health of the clients that you're seeing. Mm-hmm. Are there also themes that are coming up with the way chronic pain is manifesting within our community?
Oh, yes. Great.
I'm curious.
Question.
Yeah.
I would say the biggest thing I've noticed and have reflected on is, so it's interesting because in a lot of chronic pain research, there's this idea that sometimes suppressed or unexpressed emotions or even emotional experiences, including things like traumatic experiences, can really downstream lead to dealing with chronic health conditions, and specifically chronic pain. How I see that relate to Filipino communities and the clients that I see is how a lot of our struggles and difficulties are often not allowed to be talked about, or that we don't often have a space or the permission to talk about the things that are hard, right? To mm-hmm. talk about the traumas that our families go through. And I think that has a lot to do with sometimes how that shows up in our bodies, and how that can manifest into something like chronic pain, and other chronic health conditions as well. So it's very fascinating stuff, and I think about it a lot. So I appreciate that question.
Yeah. Do you see it physically manifesting in certain body parts that are like common? Like for example, are you seeing a lot of things like centralized in the back or like headaches? Like, yeah, what in terms of location within the body, are there any themes in that?
I would say it's all over the place, but I would say common ones are headaches, chronic headaches and migraines.
Okay.
It's common in women specifically, and also high achieving and high stress environment. So like maybe someone who has a high stress job.
Mm-hmm.
Also, chronic low back pain is common, and all body pain. So things like fibromyalgia, which is really where the chronic pain conditions typically find themselves as well, is in like kind of whole body. So meaning like the pain can travel, which is what's fascinating about chronic pain too.
Yeah, no. I think I was selfishly asking you that question because I was waiting for you to identify where my pain is located. And I'm like, okay, that explains that chronic lower back pain, because I actually deal with intermittent chronic lower back pain. And and that's interesting that you just named that that's one of the common like locations where we hold pain.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yes, I myself also deal with that too. So
yeah, wow.
That's two for two right here.
Yeah. I want to know, too, now, what have you found are the most effective therapeutic tools that you've been commonly utilizing in your sessions within our with our community, with the patients that you have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the things that I have mentioned before, like acceptance commitment therapy based modality, those things I find are most helpful, because it's hard to imagine a life where you are able to do the things you want to do, especially if you're dealing with something like chronic pain or a chronic health condition. And so through that modality, I really focus on working with clients on identifying their values and how every day is there a choice that you can make to align yourself with your values in however way your body is showing up that day. I think it helps to facilitate a sense of agency, where oftentimes clients don't feel like they have a control over their life, right? They have an illness or pain that is all consuming, or you know, if it's depression or anxiety, also like that can be really all consuming. And so, empowering my clients in finding their own agency by aligning to their values, the things that make their life feel meaningful and important, is I find one of the most effective and helpful things that therapy can provide, and that I do with my clients.
Okay. Typically, do you have a certain number of sessions with clients? How do you know that they're ready to be terminated? Or how do you know that when do you reach a point where you know that it's time to terminate the therapeutic relationship?
Yeah, great question. So this is an interesting discussion I always have with clients, because they typically have the same question, right? When they're starting, they're like, how long do I need to do this for? Like, how will I, like, do I need to be in this forever? And what I always say to that is, if you are pursuing individual therapy, and especially in sort of like a private practice kind of setting, like you're just seeking a provider out, and if you have the means, seeing therapy as sort of like your health and wellness like trainer. So I don't like to put a number on, like, hey, like we'll have 8 sessions together and you know you'll be done, you'll be great. I always tell my clients, like, you can always be working on something in therapy. We have the benefit here of being able to create space for yourself to work on whatever it is that you feel like is helpful to you. So I don't like to put like an end date per se or a number of sessions. It really depends on what clients are bringing in. But that being said, I always also tell them, like, you don't have to be in this forever. Definitely, there can be chapters or phases in therapy where maybe you're in it for some time and you want to take a break, and then you can always come back. Or you feel like you're at a point where actually all the things that I want to work on, I feel like I have a good grasp on. There's still things I'm working on, but like I know what to do. Then you know you're ready to be done and not have to return ever. So, but that being said, you know, I always tell clients, like, you are always welcome to come back, because I think as human beings, we're always evolving, always are, you know, can improve on something. And I like to have that sort of open door for clients to be able to come back if they feel like they want to ever in later in life, or, you know, if they've taken a pause.
Got it. Now, do you specialize just in individual therapy? You were talking about family systems earlier, so I wasn't sure if you also see the whole family system, or do you do couples therapy? I know we had an episode talking about Trauma Bond, the Trauma Bond series that came out with One Down Media. When we did that episode, Leo Albea, the CEO and founder of One Down Media, mentioned that when they were reflecting on trauma, a lot of it was rooted in the trauma that was passed down from their parents. So I'm curious, when you approach your sessions, if you also include other family members, or typically do you just work with that individual?
So typically and currently my practice is all individual therapy. So I don't see couples. I don't have a lot of experience in couples therapy. I think that requires a very special type of provider and requires a lot of specific training. But I always, you know, will refer to my colleagues if a client is wanting to work on like a couple, their relationship specifically. But in terms of family stuff, I don't do family therapy. Most of the clients that find me are the ones that are like, I'm struggling because my family or my parents are difficult to navigate and difficult to communicate with. And most of them are not willing to even pursue or be open to therapy. And so that's the biggest challenge, is how do we start change in the family system when it's, you know, just one person coming to therapy. But
yeah,
I would say that it's not impossible. It just, there's certainly a requirement of like, there's going to be a level of acceptance that is needed for the fact that we cannot control another person. But that doesn't mean there aren't things that you can do individually to especially protect your own mental health, learn how to set boundaries.
Yes.
And how to communicate in a way where you feel like, yeah, you're taking care of yourself, whether or not your family member is willing or unable to reciprocate.
All right. Let's shift and talk about your yoga, because I know that you also offer group sessions, workshops, and yoga and mindfulness classes. Tell us more about these.
Yeah, so occasionally I'll have things like group therapy that I offer. So in the past, I've held like group therapy for folks who are dealing with chronic pain. And in those kind of types of groups, I'll integrate like a yoga portion as well. So it's quite nice. We like gather and folks share about their experiences. And then, you know, I might have some like material on chronic pain, and then we go into like a yoga class essentially. So that can be a fun thing to do. Other than that, I do also like to hold workshops and classes, like you're saying, on things like Filipino-American mental health topics, chronic pain, anxiety, intuitive eating, body image. And generally, when I host those, I do integrate yoga or mindfulness in all those things, too. So, yeah, sometimes I'll have drop in like I'll do like an occasional one-off yoga, online yoga class for folks who might be interested in signing up and things like that. So it's nice to be able to offer that kind of service.
Yeah, that sounds like a fun array of topics that you provide for our community. Being that we're in September of 2024, do you have any upcoming workshops or classes that our community can sign up for if they're interested?
I don't have any yet. I'm definitely still planning for the end of the year at this point. But if folks are interested in keeping up to date with workshops and classes I have, I usually encourage folks to follow me on Instagram. They can sign up for my newsletter on my website as well. I like to post event announcements on Instagram and through my newsletter on my website. So I can provide that information too.
All right, folks, look out for that. We're going to get there. This is Cheryl coming back in. So Dr. Rona, you're also the Greater Los Angeles Co-Chapter Lead for Therapy Nye with Areolandrum, LMFT. And that stands for Licensed Marriage and Family Therapist when it comes to that acronym. Explain to our community the areas that you cover within Therapy Nye a little bit more for them to understand it. We had Christine Melendrez actually in an earlier episode talk about Therapy Nye being the Bay Area chapter lead. And what's in store for your regional chapter moving forward towards the end of the year?
Yes, Ariel and I are both very excited to be co-leading Therapy Nye Greater Los Angeles. We aim to support the Greater Los Angeles, which includes LA, of course, Orange County, and the Inland Empire region. So quite vast, but I wanted to include anyone who might be looking for a community of therapists, of healthcare providers, wellness practitioners, since I know there's a lot and the region can feel very quite vast. And so just wanting to invite whoever is looking for that kind of community. But yeah, we have tons of plans in the works. We're hoping in the next year to host things like a health and wellness fair, maybe a retreat for providers and wellness practitioners, and other events for the Filipino community at large to gather, talk about mental health, learn about wellness, and just continue building that sense of community here in a region that can feel quite vast, as I was saying. Like, I want people to feel connected. So that's our aim.
And then question, I know that we have some of our community also in Ventura County. Would that be something that, you know, they would also be able to take advantage of your regional chapter?
Oh, sure. Yes, yes. So Greater Los Angeles, yeah, we're trying to capture anyone who just is interested in meeting and being connected to this community. In Southern California. So San Diego, for folks who are in San Diego, there is a San Diego chapter of Therapy Nye. So aside from San Diego, anyone in the sort of near LA region, we're trying to reach. So yeah, let us know.
All right. We'll also have you share that information for folks that want to be a part of Therapy Nye and want to learn more about your upcoming events.
Yes.
Being that we're a health and wellness podcast, we typically like to also ask our guests, what are your own health and wellness routines or self-care practices? So we know that you are a yoga practitioner. Mm-hmm. What additional health and wellness routines or self-care practices do you do outside of your therapeutic and community roles that you hold?
Yes, so it's been a great year actually for me for this question, because I have recommitted to my mind-body health this year. So this year I've discovered Reformer Pilates. So that's been an amazing, amazing thing for me exercise-wise, because I find that it's really focuses on that mind-body connection. There's like a targeted exercises and movements for specific areas of the body that really helped me to attune to those parts of my body. So I find that really great for mind-body connection. And I notice myself getting stronger each time. So I love that It's been really great. But other things that I've been enjoying this year is returning back to dance, actually. So when I was in high school and college, I used to dance on competitive hip hop teams. But since starting grad school, like that part of my life had to kind of go on the back burner. And so it's been amazing to kind of come back to it now. I take classes here or there. I also am exploring other like dance modalities that I haven't done. Like earlier this year, I tried pole dancing class for the first time. Wow, that requires so much strength. And I found it really empowering, really fun way to heal your relationship to your body. I'm also been trying out heels dance classes lately, which has been really fun. It's a new way for me to explore dance again. So those are things that I like to do for my self-care, like things that get me into my own body and out of my head.
So yeah,
that, as well as other creative hobbies. I consider myself a multi-hobbyist, so I like to try a lot of different things. Crafts, I like pottery every now and then. So stuff that I like to do with my friends too.
I get it. And that's a nod, as you mentioned, dance, to some of our episodes we've had in our past episodes. Arnel Calvario, in our occupational therapy episode, who was really all over the dance scene, world of dance, Culture Shock, just to name a few. We've also had Jardy Santiago talking about house dance and health. We've also had Bea Lasaka and Adrian Harbruda, who came on to talk about break dancing. Yeah, and that's something to look forward to, as we had that also happen in the Olympics. So just feel free to check out those as well, because it's really common for our community also to be involved in dance as a way to work through our own health and wellness.
Yes, yes. Talk about mind-body connection for sure.
For sure. As we begin to close, now let's get to it. Everyone's like, okay, Cheryl, let's get to it. How do we get a hold of Dr. Rona? So how can our community book a free consultation? I saw you offer that on your website with you.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
And learn more about your group, workshops, classes.
Yes. So I have a website. It's ronapsyd.com. So www.ronasyd.com. Folks can send me a message through there if you're interested in getting connected, if you're interested in a free consultation for therapy services. On my website as well, there's a place where you can input your email if you're interested in my newsletter, getting that in your inboxes for announcements, general musings about mental health and life and things like that. I'm starting to use that more, so I'm trying to use it for event announcements or workshops or groups or things like that. I'm also quite active on Instagram. That's usually where folks find me as well. So if you'd like, you can follow me at Dr. Rona Saidi. So it's at dr.rona.psyd. And then email as well. So feel free to email me if you'd like to get connected. It's dr.rona.psyd@gmail.com as well. Yeah.
Perfect. And if they would like to get more information on the Greater Los Angeles Therapy Night chapter or more about Therapy Night, what is a way for them to get that information?
Yes, so please visit Therapy Night's website. That's www.therapinay.com. You can also follow them on Instagram to know all about the events and to keep up to date, even on what all the chapters are doing. So that's at therapinxy. So that's Instagram. And then specifically for the Greater Los Angeles chapter, you're welcome to DM me or Ariel on Instagram, and we'll send you a interest form that will sign you up. If you are a mental health provider, a healthcare professional, a wellness practitioner, looking for community. We also have an email. It's quite a mouthful, though, so I'm sure Cheryl will post it on the captions and things. So I'll let you access it through there. But you can also DM me, and I can send that to you immediately for folks who might be interested.
Okay. Cheryl, coming back in, speaking. Final words, Dr. Rona. Is there anything else you would want our community throughout the global diaspora to know when it comes to the connection between mental health and chronic pain?
Yeah. Oh, man. These things can be extremely difficult to talk about. And, you know, it can be so often that we don't have a space to talk about those things. So I just want to emphasize that that is a normal experience to have, and that it's okay to seek and ask for support and help. So I encourage people to. It's so important to find ways to take care of both your physical health and your mental health. Once again, they impact one another. And, you know, I always tell people too that it can be overwhelming to know where to start sometimes, but start anywhere. Anywhere will do, and take it one step at a time. Lastly, I think the last thing I'll add is that community is so important and so effective for managing things like mental health or a chronic pain or a chronic health condition. So finding support groups, classes, or workshops to meet other people who are also going through those similar things. Sometimes they're going to be the ones who really help and support you, even aside from all the providers you might be seeing. So I always encourage that to folks. It's easy to feel isolated and alone when we're trying to navigate mental and physical health challenges. So give yourself permission, seek help, support whenever and wherever you can.
Yep. Great. Well said, Dr. Rona. Before I jump actually into thank yous and acknowledgements and promoting our next episode, I thought about our community and how this is a global community tuning in. Do you happen to know other maybe therapists or other providers in other regions that are doing similar work, just in case they're in different time zones? But also, you also work with, I guess, individuals in different time zones as well, I'm assuming, or?
So actually, my license is California only. So okay. At this time, I am only seeing California clients. I know California is working on potentially being part of CIPACT, which is kind of a more national, like a licensure almost to be able to see clients in other states. But until that happens, it's unfortunately I'm not able to see other clients for therapy specifically. When it comes to any classes or workshops that I might have, anyone is welcome. So that is a way that folks can access me. But in terms of other providers, I definitely recommend, if you're looking for a mental health practitioner or wellness practitioner, somewhere like Therapy Nye, if you identify as Filipino, they have a directory on their website, so you can search, and you know, they're collecting folks globally, practitioners globally. And then if you are someone dealing with physiological conditions, PPD, which is the psychophysiological disorders, like there's like an association or they have a website, you can search for providers and healthcare professionals as well through them. So,
okay. And that's a national website in the U.S. or is that also
international?
International.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you again, Dr. Rona, for talking with us and teaching us more about mental health and chronic pain. We look forward to witnessing your journey unfold with both your therapeutic practice and the Greater Los Angeles Therapy Nye chapter. We can't wait to see what more you have in store for us as both one of the regional chapter co-leads and also your therapeutic practice as it continues to develop and evolve. We'll also continue to help share your upcoming opportunities as we stay connected in partnership.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. I just want to say thank you, Cheryl, for having me on. I really admire and love what you all are doing here at Philippine X in Wellness. So it's so needed to, I think, sharing resources and talking about these things is so important in our community. So I want to thank you as well.
Oh, you're welcome. And to our community, for our next episode, we'll be bringing back from our first season on Clubhouse, author and co-founder of the Kailukuan School of Indigenous Science, Ka Virgil Mayor Apostol, as we discuss cultural perspectives on wellness for Filipino American History Month. Stay tuned as this episode will air on Wellness Wednesday, October 16th. As we close, we'd like to acknowledge once again our guest speaker, Dr. Rona Saidi, our graphic designer and producer for our opening and closing track, Richie, our advisors, Allison De La Cruz, Rian De Los Reyes, and Salfo Tio Logo, our community partners, SoCal Filipinos, This Filipino American Life, Rising Filipinas, Therapy Nai, and all of our community members for your shares and support. As always, we'll share more about our guest offerings on our Instagram stories and highlights for permanent access with any of their upcoming events. Be sure to follow us at Philippine X and Wellness on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, and on X at Philippine X, the letter N, well, followed by the letters N and S. Don't forget to continue to hit like and subscribe on our Philippine X and Wellness YouTube channel. Thank you always for believing in us.
Yes.
Be well, everyone. Continue to take care of yourselves and each other.
Yeah. Sis, maraming salamat.
Matamogid na nga salamat. We'll be right back.